Currently Psych, the University of Plymouth Computing Society presents Lock-In.
To log in the Termisoc podcast. Hopefully a short one tonight, one story each, because it's getting late. But as always, we're here with Ben Ali.
Hello.
Rich Jeffrey.
Hello.
Chris, our sound guy.
Hello.
And myself, Dan Cossa. And tonight, we actually have a live studio audience. Yay! Isn't that awesome? We're almost popular. It's great. Anyway, we'll get going quickly and smoothly. Ben, give us your lovings and hatings for this week.
I have been loving command line applications.
Oh, there's a surprise.
Yes, well, I've, you know, mostly stopped using Firefox, and I found a nice command line music player that does random ordering and things, and it's all very good. So I'm happy.
What do you use instead of Firefox?
W3M.
Oh, really?
I tried Lynx, but I prefer W3M.
Yeah. Oddly enough, not on my supported browsers list at work.
I'm sure you do support it, though.
Yeah.
And I've been hating Perl. A project I've been, you know, doing some work on recently is written in Perl. And so I've been trying to... They do nowadays support plugins written in not Perl, but that's brand new and no one's actually done it yet. I don't really want to be the first to do it. And, you know, otherwise I have to use Perl, and it's a pain.
I must raise the question, why the hatred of Perl?
Because, you know, I don't know if it's just me or the language in general, but every time I write Perl, it comes out looking like someone's already compiled it. It's not very good.
So it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that you spoke to somebody who's developing... is it Debian for mobile devices... who also seems to have a hatred of Perl.
Oh, no. His reasoning is that Perl takes up a huge amount of space and isn't needed. My reasoning is just coding it, I can't stand it. Completely separate matters.
Fine.
Anyway, Rich, we'll move on away from rather dodgy discussions of programming languages, because as we know, we can talk about them all blooming night. Rich, what are your lovings and hatings?
Right, well, my loving is definitely pre-owned games. The fact is that any place where you can get Perfect Dark and Lilac Wars for £10, both of them for £10, you know, that's just got to rock. You can't, you know, nowadays, things like PlayStation 3, you spend £60 on one game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so beautiful that the fact that you can buy really quality games for such low prices.
And they are quality games.
They are quality
games. I
would
quite like a copy of Lilac Wars myself. I have Perfect Dark already.
I just love how quickly DVD films are now depreciating to nearly manufacturing costs alone.
Yeah. It is quite impressive the fact that... I think it's partly because of the whole HD-DVD thing coming in, that the fact that DVD prices are hitting the floor. Right, and my hating this week, actually this month in fact, the bugger who replaced my door. The fact is that somebody has come along in the past couple of weeks and replaced the back door, probably for sort of security reasons, because the door we had before had a big glass window and might have been slightly unsecure. But what they have replaced it with is a lovely plastic thing. The trouble is they haven't given us any keys, and we've spoken to the letting agents about it, and they went, "We don't know anything about it." This kind of worries me. The question does raise, who actually did replace the door, and why? Why?
You may possibly want to, you know, barricade it.
Yes.
Anyway, so Rich is being fortified out of his own house, and Ben is hating programming languages. Myself, well, I'm just enjoying having money. I've finally been paid in my new job, and I've actually been able to, buy things, eat. It's been great. And it has meant that I can go out of an evening. Of course, I can't go out during the week because, of course, I have a job. So that's my hating. And both my loving and the hating are the same thing, my job. And, that's how jobs go, I suppose. Not much you can do about it. But I've got the money and I just have to wait for those wonderful weekends. Nice. Anyway, let's get going. One story each. Ben, what is your story of the week?
My story is Microsoft Office Open XML has been rejected by ISO. Which is a good thing. Yay!
I thought it was just the fast tracking of.
The fast track has rejected. They can still, amend it and send it in again or whatever. But
I'm assuming that goes in grain with Sweden bribing everybody.
That is kind of another point I was going to make, since there has been several stories about the same kind of subject in the last week or two. Sweden recused from their vote because several companies, I believe, joined Sweden's national standards body after being paid by Microsoft to do so.
Also, in Australia, same thing has happened.
Lots of dodgy business practices going on there.
Well, as far as I can tell, this is just another one of those odd wars that we have to endure, and eventually someone will come out on top and we'll reach a situation where no one else can break in just because you have an established competitor. Microsoft are doing everything in their power to ensure they're the people who come out on top, and they've got a fight on their hands for obvious reasons.
Well, the thing is, I can't understand why ISO are actually even considering standardising something that, a year ago, they made something else a standard for exactly the same purpose. And yes, Office Open XML covers spreadsheets and whatever else, whereas apparently ODF only covers text documents at the moment, that is. But apparently the spreadsheet is just terrible.
But you can have multiple standards on the same thing.
Yeah, but
it's
why?
True, but as we've discussed in the past, the whole fact that Office Open XML is flawed due to the horrible level of backwards compatibility they've put into it.
Yeah.
Where they've backwards compatibility it to Lotus 1-2-3.
Yeah, well, exactly. That they shouldn't be making this part of the standard. It should be part of the program that implements the standard. You're perfectly allowed to implement extensions to accept a standard as long as they don't become necessary. And I think backwards compatibility with an earlier project is perfectly fine.
You're saying the standard should be kept pure so that it's the basis for other things.
Yeah. The standard should not include what Rich was saying about Lotus 1-2-3 was that Lotus 1-2-3 back in the 80s or whatever had a bug where it would consider February the 12th or the year 1900 to be a leap year.
Yeah.
Whereas it actually isn't. Now the early Excel importer for 1-2-3 documents, 1-2-3 spreadsheets, had to take this into account, but instead of just converting into and out of the right format, Excel duplicated this bug,
which makes
Excel
sense.
No, you should keep it in the importer, handle it correctly in your program.
Yeah, exactly. The fact is that the importer should have a thing in it saying correct this mistake, instead of going importer should import it to Excel, where Excel will make exactly the same mistake to save face.
Yeah. And then not only that, but then you go and force everyone else who implements your standard to duplicate the same bug. It's not even, well, I don't know if they're allowed to do it. I assume they can just do it in an importer and exporter for OpenXML, but still, encoding that into the standard, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm ranting quite a lot, and you two aren't talking very much. Please
no.
Talk
well,
more.
I have a lot to say about standards, given that I've been beating my head against them recently.
Well.
And I think it's pretty core for a standard to, yes, stay pure and look into the future, but at the same time, it's also got to make some leeway for the past. Admittedly, the way Microsoft have done it is a bit, for want of a better word, cack-handed. But it's still something that must be considered when you're doing something like this. But I think the important thing to remember about Microsoft is that they're looking for the business edge. And I think that's really clear from what they've done in Sweden and other places. Eventually, they're either going to win or they're going to lose. If they lose, they'll end up in, doing the proper standards way just because there's no other way to do it. Mm. Vice versa, fuck knows what's going to happen, we'll be screwed. My point of view is we've just got to wait for it to fight it out. We can't really affect it much as individuals. So we've just got to wait until someone wins.
Which we just hope is ODF.
The fact is,
it makes far more sense to have a document format that isn't weighted in any particular way. Mm. The fact is that ODF is a shared, is intended to be a shared standard, rather than a company inventing a standard and then trying to push it onto everyone else. I do have to raise here the fact that, of course, in this discussion about Western, the two options in Western culture, we have to take into account the fact that is that over in China they've got a third standard which we haven't even seen over here. I can't put what lettering is though, but it's something obscure.
Doesn't Office XML, Open XML, whatever they're calling it, include fields for unspecified binary data
used by
Microsoft Word that no one else knows what they do, but programs have to handle this unspecified,
probably a blob of some kind.
Well, yeah, but
at the end of the day, Microsoft aren't looking to screw anyone over with their programming. They're looking to screw people over in business. It's probably just a stupid design decision, or it's got some clever thing that no one's bothered to document. That's normally what happens. But anyway, I mean, it's hard to have an opinion about this kind of thing because it will happen one way or another and we just have to learn to live with it at some point or another.
It's perfectly true.
So, I think that's perfectly crucial news, but shall we shift on?
Yeah.
Rich, what have you got for us this week?
Okay, I think I'm going to go with Facebook. And essentially what they've done is, back in the past, Facebook locked themselves off, essentially. To see anything within Facebook, you needed to become a member. And, you know, which is fairly straightforward. And then you could sort of view the lists of... You could start searching for people on it. But now Facebook have opened it up, so therefore now search engines and anyone can view who's on Facebook, people's pictures. If anyone has accidentally left their profile unlocked, all that data will be in there as well, all their friends and so on and so forth. I'm not quite sure how to take this.
I think it's a dumbass decision, given that Facebook came pretty much at the bottom of a list of companies with mild privacy problems, something we discussed either last time...
Above Google, wasn't it?
Yes, right above Google.
Ironically.
Yeah, well, Google was in there just because they've got such a wide range of cock-ups. Whereas Facebook, they have something wrong at a very fundamental level in terms of what should be considered private and what shouldn't be. Now, as long as Facebook make sure people know that their things can be kept private and they provide make very easy to do so, which, to be fair, they do.
They've got quite
a nice user interface for that kind of thing. If it's the default to have it very public, then I think that's just stupid. There's a lot of information not on even my Facebook page, which I've got no problem with everyone in this room seeing and, you know, everyone on my friends list seeing, but I don't want random stalkers and, most importantly, spammers finding out. There's plenty of stuff I would rather keep, you know, in the family, as it were.
Yeah. And to be honest, I think that makes perfect sense, and the fact that Facebook is so unsecurity conscious regarding this, especially in sort of all the things that you hear about people stumbling around on the net and finding out people's information, I'm worried.
I'm not concerned for myself because I publish most of my information on my website anyway. It's there. Google can find it. Google knows it already. But that doesn't mean I can't see that other people don't really want their details out there for anyone to find. And as long as it is, you know, the default to be paranoid and security conscious and not show anything to anyone ever, then that's fine. But
well, I assume they're doing this in order to catch up with sites like, well, Flickr, who are a big photo-sharing website, and, of course, Facebook is rapidly becoming. Photos is the biggest application, I believe, used on there. And, of course, the big daddy MySpace, with all of its flaws and problems, has always been incredibly public. And to a certain extent, that's been some of the popularity of it, that you can go to it and you can view a band's website very quickly and easily. But I think there's a crucial difference that Facebook, there's a lot of assumption that what you have on there is moderately private. It's definitely you and your friends. It's not your face on the world.
Well,
it's your face.
It makes it fairly difficult to view anyone outside your own network for starts.
Yeah, and I think that encourages people to put information on their Facebook pages that they wouldn't put on, say, a MySpace page or a Bebo page or whatever. And it's the, I think this is a subtle shift in where Facebook want to go with their application. I don't think it's a good thing. I think the privacy and the, you know, the small groupness of Facebook is what really attracted to me to me in the first place.
The fact is that MySpace is very, 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 very commercial. The fact that now the greater majority of MySpace is taken up by advertisements and band websites, and you really don't know what's all behind it, essentially. The fact is that Facebook is a people site rather than a site of pure advertising and music bands and so on and so forth, which of course is, at least in the UK, 47% to blame with the Arctic Monkeys.
Yes,
because if they hadn't gone, oh yeah, we had our stuff on MySpace, and it would, nobody would bother. The fact is that places, much better band websites like Play Louder and so on and so forth, are the places to go for music. And the trouble is that, I mean, MySpace's radio player is terrible.
Oh yeah, it's pretty shocking.
I suppose you're best that they've now locked it off, so that now you can only play. You can't rewind fast forward. It just comes up disabled.
Oh, good. That's useful.
It's just, the best thing of all is they haven't replaced the player. They've merely just updated it, so now they've disabled the scan button.
I hate the way that, you know, instead of, you know, making the effort to have their own site, a radio site, I think it was Plymouth Sound or someone, or they'd give out the address of their MySpace page.
Well, to be fair, that is, I would consider that to be a good thing. Places like the Voodoo Lounge and the various promotions websites and things like that, having a MySpace page means that a band can say, okay, go to our MySpace page, which is just our band name or whatever, and you can search for it, and it always turns up. MySpace is always at the top of Google lists and things like that. Whereas someone's website could be named anything, doesn't have a common format, doesn't have a common this, that, or the other. Rich's argument is, of course, that there are much better websites to do this with.
Well, yeah.
Not MySpace. But I think having a common place to start from is a fantastic thing for regular people and bands who are not technically savvy or want to encourage regular people to look at them. And I'm not talking about Muse here, I'm talking about Scientist the Orange Pip and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay,
quickly just want to point this out here. MySpace is a pile of crap. Please stop using it.
Please, oh,
the
for
fact
the love
is,
of
is that
God.
Is it looks terrible. The profile mangling you have to do to make it look different is really not worth your time. Find somewhere else.
Yeah.
Please.
I mean, the only appeal behind it is similar to the AOL appeal of old, and probably still, middling years now. And what you have is, also with MySpace, every single page is absolutely mangled anyway. if you go to anyone who's an enthusiast on MySpace, it's almost guaranteed to lock up your browser if you haven't got at least a gig of memory.
I must say, do you like the way that Facebook is clean?
Very.
Yeah. The fact is that it's because of its limitations in some areas makes it better. And the fact is, making it so that users can do whatever they fancy with it actually makes it worse.
Although it doesn't make it work any better in a text-only browser, which I, to be honest, can't see why, because it looks perfectly fine to me.
Yeah, but they're going. I think MySpace still mangles the text as well.
I don't know if MySpace works at all because I don't use MySpace, but I tried Facebook in W3M and it just tells me to use Firefox or Opera.
That's
all.
Nice.
You tossers.
Yeah.
No, I won't. I'll just go away.
Well, that partly serves you right because...
Oh, let's not start this.
Oh,
so
I'm going to stop. I can't be bothered criticising you because there's nothing we can do about it.
I think it's a good point, though, that the whole constraints are liberating thing about Facebook, whereby there is a limit to what you can do, makes it cleaner and more accessible, etc., etc., etc. With the recent introduction of the whole developers application framework thing...
Oh, my God, that's irritating.
People's pages are starting to fill up and look just a little bit MySpacey.
But the thing is,
you get like 15 invitations for like all these different things. Ooh.
All the same thing though.
Yeah. So and so's invited you to be a zombie. So and so's been invited to be a pirate. So and so's invited you to be an angel. So and so's been invited you to be a devil. The thing is, they're all these different programs.
They're all doing exactly the same things to, you know, poke your friend or give them beer or throw sheep at them or. I don't care.
I'm so impressed by the way that's like 8 different poking programs.
Yeah.
So
only
like
8. Christ.
The fact is that you get the regular poke, which is not brilliant because you get poke and poke back, which is not brilliant. Yeah. Super poke is, and you know, I quite like the way you can just poke you can do whatever you fancy. But then you've got things like poke pro, which is you type in what you want to do. So it's the equivalent of going /me does something to so and so. It just doesn't.
The fact is, it's
starting to get stupid.
The thing is, I was reading about the, you know, platform thing the other day, and basically you're so limited in what you can do that there's nothing else you can write with the bloody thing.
I'm still going to build my Venn diagram of confectionery. You can't stop me.
Well, I'm not saying that. What I was talking about was things that become popular. The you're very limited in either what becomes popular that you can actually write with that platform, and basically you've got poke applications and that was about it.
Well, there are some good ones, like did you see that there is a Pandora Facebook application now, so you can share radio stations, which is quite nice, except for my radio stations were all shocking, really. I wouldn't share them with anyone, but the principle is fine. You can do stuff, but it takes know-how beyond the API.
Yeah.
You were saying a moment ago how about restrictions are liberating or whatever. And the thing is, I don't agree. But in the same manner, I don't think that MySpace is any better because you're still ridiculously restricted in what you can do. And they make it even more hard to make things as individualized as.
But the fact is, you've got to look at it with the fact with. Sorry, too many facts, I apologize. You've got to look at things like Facebook and MySpace. They are not website replacements. They are website replacements for the people whose website was essentially devoted to this is about me, and so on and so forth.
My website.
Your website. My website. People who weren't that clear on HTML and essentially just wanted to have a place on the web that was theirs.
Well,
but that's the thing, is just that many of those sites that devoted to people just saying, this is me, this is what I'm doing, and so on and so forth, are terrible. Well, so it's quite nice the fact that Facebook prevents them from making terrible websites.
That's true. But basically, I'd suggest, if you've got something interesting to say, start a blog, go to WordPress.com or Blogspot or wherever, start a blog, write your interesting things down. If not, don't bother.
If you're a University of Plymouth student, come pester Termasoc at the Freshers' Fair in a couple of weeks.
And give us money.
But the money's not important.
If it is,
Big Waters of Cash, Big Waters of Cash. Yeah, and we'll set you up with your own bloody website, and we'll teach you how to do it properly.
Yeah.
But I think...
And socials, and... It's all these wondrous things that Termstock do. Tell me a bit more about them, Dan.
I recommend you go to the website, personally.
Though, admittedly, we did receive an email the other day telling us that the website was... They were confused by the website, didn't know where everything was.
Is there not a menu?
There is a menu, but... Well, then again, they weren't... I don't think they were local.
Termstock.org. At the side. Home. About us. Our services.
To be fair, we have been planning to redesign that website for each and every year I've been at university.
I think we should do it. Before the Freshers' Fair, we should design a new website.
Oh, great.
It's recorded now, so therefore we know for a fact we're supposed to be doing it.
Anyway, we'll move away from that. I just wanted to say something quick about the constraints are liberating thing. When I say constraints, I'm not meaning forcing you to do something. But, for example, if everyone codes the same standards, you're constrained to using XHTML like everyone else. You're constrained to using CSS 2.1 or whatever. It means that you concentrate more on the content rather than how you present it and copying that side of it up. And I think with Facebook... It's exactly the same. You are stuck with your profile page and your wall and your inbox, but with that, you actually talk about what you need to be doing, rather than spending your entire time making your neon pink flashy website.
Well, that's right. I don't mean people should be allowed to make it look ridiculous, because, I mean, you've seen my website, Christ almighty.
Yeah, I mean, the flashing things, there's a big flash player running along the top, and oh, God.
For example, if you type in a list of books in the book section, and for example one of them happens to have a comma in the middle of the name, it'll break it because
it'll separate it out.
It'll separate it into two books. What?
That's not a constraint. That's a cock up. When I say a constraint, it's more of a framework.
I know that point wasn't really relevant to what you were saying, but it annoys me anyway. So,
but you're a developer now. So
but then again, there's groups on Facebook devoted to stop putting is for your profile.
That's true. That's true. Status. Hopefully someone will listen eventually.
Yeah, I think it should limit it to like a number of options. Because the fact is that... it starts to bring issues in if you don't give a sort of... Pronoun? No. I forgot what the word is.
We don't do English, we're geeks.
Yes.
But I do appreciate that they limit you to a certain number...
Yes. Orally.
Preposition.
I like that they limit you to a certain number of characters, because then you don't get people's statuses pages filling up with pages and pages of crap. That is supposed to go... Your notes bit, sorry. So I think it's a good thing.
Rich is feeling amicable about something. Blah, 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 blah. 4 pages later.
Yes.
Sorry.
And that's the story of the heffalump.
I've just looked up the word is in Wiktionary, just to check what type of word it was. And I've come up with English, noun. Plural form of I.
Nicely done, whoever wrote that. Free content, people. Community content. This is what happens.
Wiktionary is special.
Well, the entire thing is...
What does Encyclopedia say about it in my house?
That's probably going to be more accurate.
Anyway, Carl.
Anyone? Anyway, as everyone quickly taps... See, this is why I don't have a laptop. I have a small square of paper, which is...
This is a verb. It's... form of to be, isn't it? Surely. No.
I would. You're the language geek.
Yeah, it's a form of to be. Yeah.
Or not to be.
That is the question.
I am. You are. He, she, or it is.
Condition of existence.
It's to be.
Makes more sense in French. Personally, I like French.
I like Norwegian verbs. Actually, they're much much simpler than English or Spanish or. No, that's the only language I know.
More than me. Barely speak English.
Huh?
What?
Yeah. The ones of Encyclopedia. A social commentary is the spoken word or voiceover recorded for use within a documentary film. Although in recent years, it has been expanded to the written word within national broadsheets and other publications.
beauty.
Traditionally presented in gravelly, hushed tones, this style remains the most popular form, where the voiceover is performed by the clipped English accent of Richard Bryce, the rich, warm resonance of Leslie Nielsen, or the rolling, sonorous vocalisation and open familiarity of Clive James.
Clive James is good.
Basically, what we're trying to say is don't use encyclopedia to, say, write an essay.
Yeah.
It's not a good reference work.
I must admit, I was on a one of these random websites for retro gaming stuff. And somebody did bring up the fact that it said like the Atari 2600 was built in a shed out of bits of wood and grain. And, somebody actually went onto the forum and went, "Is this really true?" And they went, "Ah, the ones of encyclopedia." Yeah. And they went, "What's so special about encyclopedia?"
Oh, yes.
Actually, encyclopedia does have the plural form of the letter I as the definition of is. Contrary to popular belief, is this not the third person singular present indicative form of the verb be?
The thing is about encyclopedia, it is special, however, it's special in the other way.
Yes. Community content, can't beat it. Anyway, shall we move on to the final story?
Yes.
I've actually got a choice here today.
Toss a coin. Or just pick the best one.
Well, when I say pick the best one, you've got a choice, really. You've got a Windows-only one, you've got a Windows and Novell one, or you've got one I got from Computing Business.
Oh, God almighty.
I see. I don't know.
Toss a coin. I'll rant about it anyway. I'm happy to...
Contestant number three.
Okay, number one is heads. Number two is tails. We'll leave the business.
If it lands on its edge, it's number three.
It's number three. Okay, here we go. It's heads, so we go with the Windows-only one. I'm sure you'll have something to say. Now, those out of you who have the dubious honour of having to tech support your friends and family will know what a hilarious and uplifting experience it can be, especially over the phone. And there are many, many tools to help your average geek fix a computer remotely. Now, there was, well, there is, I suppose, still, a project called AutoPatcher, which was much more useful before the days when everyone had broadband. But basically, the AutoPatcher team would take every hotfix and every Windows update thing and every this, that, and the other, and they would bundle them together in nice big CD-sized downloads. So you could download them all, burn them onto a CD, and then you could carry them in your bag, and when you come across a computer that hasn't been updated since 1997, you could bring it up to line pretty speedily. I used to keep three, one with Service Pack 2 on, and then AutoPatcher Lite and the AutoPatcher extras. Always useful. Unfortunately, especially given some previous things, Microsoft's lawyers this week tracked down the AutoPatcher team and kicked them swiftly in the balls.
Oh, what?
Unfortunately, the AutoPatcher crew are no more. They have been banned because Microsoft is citing the fact that they don't want people distributing their material,
even though it's free,
except for through the Microsoft website. Now, to a certain extent, there's a good technical reason for that, because you've got no way of trusting it.
Well, the thing is, I think that in pure copyright terms, they're completely justified. You are not necessarily given the right to redistribute.
No, in fact, it's explicitly denied.
Well, yes.
Yes, but you're talking about EULAs again. And EULAs, we don't, at this table,
But
we don't recognise long pieces of things that says, you have to click yes, otherwise you die.
Even plain standard copyright law does not give you the right to redistribute, modified or unmodified. So
Microsoft aren't complaining about that. They're talking about the whole reason that they don't want it coming from an untrusted source.
Well, surely it would make sense if they provided an application that would download each one from Microsoft in turn, turn it into CD.
Yeah. Well, this is where we get into the entertaining world of subtext. Now, Microsoft have known about AutoPatcher for a long time.
Is that
obviously
kind of paint you use to write the numbers on submarines?
Yeah. But, and in fact, they have said before that they don't care what the AutoPatcher team do. In fact, they are quite happy for it to continue, because from a tech support point of view, it's freaking useful. We've already established that. So there are plenty of theories being bandied around the old web at the moment as to why Microsoft have chosen now. And I think the biggest one is the miracle that is WGA, the Windows Genuine Advantage tool. Microsoft don't want anyone downloading updates unless they have been force-fed through the Windows Genuine Advantage tool. And I think Microsoft are removing a key useful feature just so they can cut down on an extra bit of piracy. And to be honest, they probably won't anyway.
Yeah, because as raised the last podcast, which you should really listen to, you know.
It's good.
Yeah.
Theme tune and everything.
Exactly. What was I saying? Oh, yes. you put me right off track.
Sorry.
I think it's a case of foot, self, and shot.
No, the fact is that by locking things down to the genuine advantage tool, what they're actually doing is breeding people to pirate Windows that doesn't use the genuine advantage tool. And it's making Vista less secure. Admittedly, I know the very good reason why they've decided why now for the autopatcher is, of course, that Vista SP1 is coming along.
Already? Christ
on. Yeah, it fucking needs it as well.
It is. It's unfortunately, Vista is requiring help. Unfortunately, the original version is broken.
Well, to be honest, it's the... So was XP, and Service Pack 1 fixed a lot of things, and then I don't recommend that anyone have any computer that doesn't have at the very least Service Pack 2 on nowadays.
Though, admittedly, when everyone installed Service Pack 2, they went, oh my god, it slowed my computer down to a crawl.
But nowadays, you really can't
do
without it.
At least Service Pack 2, does that include anything not Windows?
No. You know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, technically, Debian has had many Service Pack revisions. Every single time they say, oh look, we've got this new CD out, you know, that's technically a Service Pack revision.
Fair enough.
Yes, well, at the end of the day, we're talking different projects here. I just don't like that Microsoft have pulled the plug on this completely. I mean, it wouldn't be so bad if Microsoft, say, just bought them out or started providing CDs like this on their own that we could get cheap or even free without any problem, because then we could carry on doing our support as we've always done. I just don't like the way they have completely screwed it all over, and we are suddenly without this incredibly useful means of supporting our friends and family. And admittedly, we're not customers and clients kind of thing. We don't really put that much money back into Microsoft.
No.
But at the end of the day, it would be nice to feel at least vaguely supported.
Mm. We need.
Well, actually, no. You do say that we are not the people who put the money back into Microsoft, but we are the most important people. The trouble is that
we say so.
No, the fact is that most people who do development in a programming standpoint also do tech support for their friends and family.
Yeah.
And the fact is that if Microsoft screws people over in one respect, it makes people less willing to follow the route, to follow the path, to put money into Microsoft pocket. Essentially.
Well, it's true.
Well, if Microsoft went about making it any more difficult to help, for example, my mother fix problems with her Windows laptop, I would just say, okay, here's a Debian disk. Follow these instructions.
Well, there's the great story of the bloke on the internet who basically said, oh yeah, his girlfriend had a Windows laptop and said, oh, it keeps coming up with the blue screen and doesn't work. And his boyfriend went, well, okay, I can fix your computer, but it will change a bit and won't look the same. And she perfectly accepted it. You know, installed Ubuntu, OpenOffice, and Firefox, and she couldn't really tell the difference, because all he said was, you know, it's just going to look different. And because she knew it was going to look different, she didn't mind it. But when you start bringing in things like changing operating systems and starting to put lots of wordiness into it, that's when people get scared.
I personally recommend to anyone buying a new computer to save their pennies a little longer and buy a Mac.
Oh, yeah.
They may have their faults, but at the end of the day, they're infinitely more stable, they're fairly easy to support, and they don't have a lot of the problems Windows machines have, and they lack the complexity of Linux.
And the fact is that for anyone who is geeky enough to want to dual boot the machine. Of course, the newer versions of macOS will happily take boot camp, which, and of course, the new operating system is very, very likely to include boot camp as well.
When is that due out?
It's October, I believe. It's been put back a bit because after all the iPhone debacle.
Is it going to coincide with the release of the new iMac? Because I saw the wonderful pictures.
Well, the new really iMac cool. is now out.
Oh, really? It looks really cool.
It does, doesn't one. It? But I can imagine that they'll probably bring out a new laptop around the same time too. Actually, speaking of Apple and iPhones and iMacs and so on and so forth, got to point out that a few days ago, the new iPod and iPod Nano and iPod, what's it called? The iPod Touch has now come out. And I want to comment on the iPod Touch. The fact is that it's an iPhone. you've got to look at it and go, oh my god, why exactly did Apple decide that the new iPod should look just like the iPhone? It's odd.
From
very, very
the company
odd.
That puts so much effort into their design, it's a little odd that they're all practically reusing the whole bloody thing. It's
dropping the ball, really.
Maybe the phone could
see?
Be like
hacked.
So,
okay, we are looking at actual clones of previous products by the same people. It's a bit weird, actually.
It's interesting, seeing as that the new iPod Classic, which is formerly the iPod, and the iPod Nano have got new designs. Meanwhile, the iPod Touch is just essentially an iPhone without the phone capability.
I'm assuming for British audience, well, you know, this side of the pond audiences, given that the iPhone isn't really viable over here.
Well, no, it's coming over, though. I can't remember who's guessing it. I think it's O2.
Oh, really?
O2 aren't that bad. I've not had much problem with
it. Is O2 or Vodafone? Somebody look that up. But yeah.
Speed research.
Quick say. I think I quite like the new design of the Nano and the Classic. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I personally can't tell the difference. That's because I don't really use an iPod.
You know that the regular Nano looks like. It's a long, thin one.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, so now it looks like just a tiny version of the iPod, well, Classic, I suppose it is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that I've always found was a spectacular design. I've always loved it.
Yeah.
Well, what you're looking at is something that's distinctively iPod-ish and is still, you know, and looks sufficiently different to want to accessorise with it, I suppose. And that's exactly what they want.
Surprisingly, it's even smaller than the piece of paper I've brought along with my research on it.
And you have to photograph that with a ruler beside it, just so people can tell.
Yeah. Admittedly, questions do have to be raised about CoverFlow. If anyone's used iTunes and seen the CoverFlow feature, Apple are trying to bring this across everything.
It looks really cool, but it's quite frustrating to use, I've found.
Yeah, apparently people who've had the iPhone have said that CoverFlow has now become a burden to existence. Mm. Because seeing as the iPhone doesn't really quite understand when you tip it, when you like put it flat, and so on and so forth, it kind of assumes that you're having it sideways, and so therefore you see CoverFlow quite a lot, even when you don't want to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't update when you... And it's become an irritation for some people.
We have gotten quite a long way away from the point.
Oh yeah, flicking back to where we were.
That's a point. Where
We started off with so the conclusion to our point was
Microsoft
face.
Suck.
Microsoft suck. There you go.
What I was going to say was that one thing I like about Debian is that apt basically makes it very easy, relatively speaking, to add a new backend to get files in a different way.
Yeah, but Debian don't have the problem Microsoft do, whereby, one, they've got a reputation to maintain that they can't rely on a network of people for. You've got to admit, Debian has a different level of trust. And they also don't have to worry about piracy, for obvious reasons.
Well, yes. But it is a nice feature, I think. I mean, there's work currently going on into a BitTorrent backend.
Mm. Yes, I saw that, and that's interesting.
And there's also a ZeroConf backend, which will basically look for other Debian machines on the network and ask them for packages that have already been downloaded.
So that's almost a bit like how Maven works in its local repositories and stuff like that, which I love Maven.
And there's also, I believe, a tool that will let you grab all of your currently downloaded packages and put them on a CD for...
That's beautiful, yeah.
So, you know, if I had to support anyone using Debian, it would be very easy. I just don't really have to. It's a shame.
Oh, here's something that I haven't really discussed with you guys. What do people feel about apt Windows?
I don't think it will work.
Skippy loves it, apparently.
Well, simply because of what I've just said, basically. Microsoft's packages have to be dealt with in a very particular way. It has to be the Microsoft way, so they can maintain control over the entire procedure, which, to be fair, they need to do in order to maintain this, that, and the other.
True, but for non-Microsoft products...
For non-Microsoft products, you reach the stage where eventually one company or another isn't going to go into apt because they want to maintain their own control, and then everyone else will want to maintain... And you end up with apt that only has a very small subset of what you actually bloody need.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... You know the Google Pack, which is growing day by day because they've got a... Star Office in there now.
Have they? Yes, of course.
Which is quite nice. I don't like it, but, you know, it's nice that it's...
The advantage of Star Office over OpenOffice is the fact that the database engine actually works.
Mm. That's true. That's true. I've still got OpenOffice 2 dev on my machine from about 2 years ago, and it doesn't even load. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's a great idea, but the way... It's not even how the operating system works. It's just the mindset of the people who use it and the people who develop for it is different to how Linux users work. We work in that very apt kind of way, if that makes any sense.
One of the reasons I find it so difficult to use Windows for any extended period of time is the lack of anything even remotely resembling apps. I love being able to just... click a couple of buttons or type a couple of commands and get basically anything.
The problem is, one, with apt, you can't have advertising, which if you're selling a product, is essential.
Well,
so, the other problem is who would control the apt repository? It can't be Microsoft, because they're too big, and there are too many programs, and they would rapidly be accused of, you know, giving Microsoft products the edge, etc., etc., etc. But who else is it going to be? You're not going to get big companies putting their stuff, even if it was free, into an app repository when they could do it on their own site.
That's what you get for using commercial software, frankly.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I work for a company. We're not going to be giving our software away free, are we?
It's fair enough, and I see your point, but... I can't help but feel that free software doesn't have that problem. And I'm happy, so... I see your point, and, you know, there's always going to be people producing proprietary software.
Well, at the end of the day, when it comes to the whole proprietary versus open software argument, and this turns up a lot in magazines like CMS Magazine, which is a magazine that no one ever has ever heard of except for the 8 companies who produce CMS and the 6 people who buy it. It's... there are thousands of magazines like that, but there's always some argument about the open source versus proprietary. And open source, there's some fantastic software out there, absolutely amazing. And then there's some shocking software. My company. It's got issues, but...
That's Daniel Costa.
No, don't worry about it. It's they know. at the end of the day... I've just said the name of the company. We'll edit that out. My company... can provide guaranteed support every day of the week. We've got a team of 10, 15 people who will always be there, and we can host it for you, etc., etc. If you buy our software, you can also be guaranteed that there will be updates on a regular basis. There isn't the possibility that the developer will get bored, or the developers will descend into a random argument about, oh, I don't know, the icon, and then split into 2 projects.
And each with an identical code, but a different icon.
Yeah.
One facing left and the other facing right.
I think that what companies want is not necessarily a great code base. They want stability, and they want support when things go wrong. And I still don't think a lot of open source stuff can actually provide that.
Mostly because programmers are religiously unstable.
Well, yes, but that's why we have a whole team of project managers. My company has nothing to do with phlegm. I just want to make that fairly obvious.
Do they sell any of their products in Sunderland? I doubt it.
I don't think so, actually, no. That's very true.
Now you know why.
Yes.
No, actually, it was because Sunderland has no internet.
None at all.
It has,
yes, Sunderland has completed their IEG statement on paper. Just added some pictures in.
We have a guy sitting in the Civic Centre, and basically, if you want to send an email, you post it, and he'll, you know, Morse code it out to a data centre in Newcastle.
Apparently, that does, in some areas of America, that does actually happen. That what they do is they cache email. So what happens is that, say, a company sends out a load of email, then a guy puts onto a laptop, takes it to the internet connection and plugs it in. It's actually it's just referenced on Wikipedia, this whole system of doing this.
The Debian conference a couple of years ago apparently had that. They just could not get wireless network, you know, about 1,000, you know, pretty competent technical people from all over the world, and they couldn't get the bloody wireless working. So basically they had a few people stationed around with USB discs running backwards and forwards to the one machine that had an internet connection, uploading the updated versions of the package every so often.
Fantastic.
And apparently at this year's conference they had, you know, everyone's laptops running off about 3 PowerPoints around the place. Dozens and dozens of, you know.
Yeah, this gives me high hopes for Debian developers everywhere. You know, sort of like the entire Debian sort of programming base is suddenly wiped out when everyone gets electrocuted.
One small electrical fire and it was all over for DebConf 2007. Yeah. Actually, we've had this year's DebConf already, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, next year's. Yeah, the whole vine Brazil, isn't it? No,
Argentina.
Argentina, yes.
And then Spain, 2009, yeah. I believe.
Let's
And then Satan's armpit, 2010. Yeah.
That's in Montana, isn't it?
I think so, yes.
I want to go to Satan's armpit.
Oh, Seth.
You've been in Chris's bedroom.
Don't worry, you'll get to Satan's armpit someday.
I'm sorry, I'm rather insulted by that. There's nothing like Satan's armpit. It's a bit worse.
I get the impression we've slightly strayed off topic here.
Yeah. Well, where did we start off? Oh, yeah.
We started off with auto-patching. we've moved on to Satan's armpit. See, given I really dread to think what the third topic we're going to come up with. I'm saving that for next time. So, well, maybe the time after, because I've got two more stories here. Anyway, we need to finish off. So, let's finish off with tea, I believe, is next. Ben, what have you been drinking?
Well, just most recently, some weird lemony stuff provided by Chrissy. It was very nice.
We've all been drinking weird lemony stuff provided by Chrissy.
Good lemony shit.
It is, in fact, Lift Instant Lemon Tea.
Excellent.
I think it's quite lemony.
Mm. Oh, it's very tasty nice. Lemon.
Yeah. I'm actually quite impressed. I was expecting it to be fairly
chemically.
Yeah.
But does it taste like a lift?
I don't know, I never licked a lift.
Anyway, Rich, are you sticking with lift?
If I want a nice refreshing cup of tea, I might be tempted to go that way, but I might just stick with the red label. Speaking of which, coming up soon, we'll be moving on to the gold label Sainsbury's tea.
Oh, that's good tea. That's good. But I treated myself to one small box of that at the end of last year.
Rich,
best tea I've ever drank.
Rich, you got to be careful. Gold label is one step away from shopping at Marks and Spencer's.
Yeah, be careful.
What one quick point before we go is that in a couple of weeks' time, it's the Freshers Fair at the University of Plymouth Students' Union.
Bring us money.
Well, yes, if you're eligible to join, please do come along and, you know, we'll give you an account on our servers and shout things at you.
Maybe a T-shirt, hopefully.
Maybe.
Yeah. If I can sort it out.
But also, we are kind of discussing the possibility of, you know, recording this live from there next time round. So, maybe.
So, hey, if you want to come and join in, it'll probably be on the Wednesday evening.
Yeah, we'll do it Wednesday.
And,
So, you know,
come and shout at us and say, I love you, man. And we can hug you and tell you how it's nice to have somebody who listens to our podcast.
And then wave security over.
And then, yeah.
National Hug Day is coming up soon.
Yay.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, speaking of which,
also, Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Yeah,
yes.
19th.
Yeah. National Hug
We forgot
like
last
pirate.
Year, it was a great
Well, no,
day.
Last year no one was here to
we
talk like a pirate.
National Hug Like a Pirate Day is coming, I hope.
Oh, God.
I love you.
Anyway, I'm going to finish off with my tea of choice. Now, last time I discussed the relative merits of PG tips at my place of work, and we've actually moved on to the triangular bags now.
Fantastic.
Going up market there, Goss.
But
sorry.
Shut up. We just beat that. But my personal favourite is that I found in the cupboard where we keep all of the bags of tea and the mugs and things like that, a box of Twinings lemon and ginger.
Twinings.
I like Twinings.
Not lapdog shoe snog, then.
No. This is the tea that I actually talked about, I believe, on the first podcast.
I believe you did.
And it was such a nice tea that I spotted it and went, ooh, and surprised some people. And I had myself a mug of that. It was very tasty. Did a lot to keep me going. And I needed a lot to keep me going today. Quite a day. Anyway, that was enough from our tea and from our random rants about... Oh, God, it's been such a random podcast this time. So we'll do everything in reverse order. Let's have a goodbye from our studio audience.
Bye!
Much quieter
this
time.
Reduced down now.
Yes.
Yeah, we're missing a Seth in the studio.
From our sound production engineer guy dude.
Bye!
Chris. Ben.
Bye.
Rich.
Bye.
And from myself... Goodbye. We'll see you next time.
Hopefully.
God willing. From Freshers' Fair, come say hi.
Yes. Oh, what was the date again?
I've no idea.
It'll be on the website.
Yeah, look on the website.
Hang on. It is on the 26th and 29th of September.
Come on the 26th, because I won't be here on the 29th.
Yes, and you won't be able to fondle his abs.
Where are my abs? What are abs?
Oh, someone's going to bring some along for you.
We'll make them out of tin cans.
So you can
clunky
walk on the robots.
I think I've got a jelly mould that can make something in the suit of me. He's dropped his cookie in his tea!
Oh, God.
You're going to have lemony fresh chocolate now.
And
anyway,
on that
we're going now.
Dangerous note, we'll leave you. Goodbye, see you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Larkin Episode 5 was presented by Dan Cusser, Ben Ali, and Rich Jeffrey. Sound by Mr. Christopher Nero Solitaire Morris. Tea provided by Chrissy Harrison. Larkin is a production of TermiSight, the University of Plymouth Computing Society 2007.